Welcome, everyone, to the Pop Culture Podcast by Fantastic Geek. My name is Matt, and joining me as always is Pete. Hello, Pete.
Hello, Matt. Hello, everyone. Absolutely giddy with everything that went down at San Diego Comic-Con 2016.
Indeed, the at times equal, at times second stepchild, at times maybe occasionally superior North American comic book convention at which, Pete, I've heard one can still spot occasionally some comic books.
Yeah, occasionally they do have some. There was quite a bit of a dust up earlier this year. I remember reading an article that a comic creator essentially said that comics had been pushed out. But with the amount of content, Matt, the sheer multitude of multimedia streaming out of the convention center in San Diego this four-day weekend from Thursday through Sunday, yesterday, it's any wonder how can they fit it all? They don't fit it all under one roof.
Pete, we could have done a podcast, a boring podcast, but we could have done a whole podcast chronicling how we went about determining what we were going to talk about for this very podcast. That's how much stuff there is.
There is. But we have broken it down chronologically and again, tailoring it to the things that we cover for our specific audience and audiences across the Fantastic Geek family of podcasts.
So what we're going to discuss now, certainly well suited for the Pop Culture Podcast. Pete, looking over this agenda here, I see some Marvel ABC, some Marvel Netflix, I see some Trek, I see some movies, I see a whole bunch of stuff. So I think the audience that we have listening right now, this should get them right where they want it.
Well, let's begin with Thursday, which in the past, Matt, at, you know, San Diego and at our official con is New York, had past tense been a soft opening. But when you begin with one of the most hotly anticipated shows coming to Netflix this year in Luke Cage on your Thursday, ain't nothing soft about it.
No, not at all. And they had the cast there, and I think certainly, a great launch pad for that show. It certainly is the next big thing coming out, next new big thing. Don't want to give short shrift to our mothership, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but we'll talk about that in a little bit. Luke Cage getting that big push, that big panel, and the new teaser trailer that looks absolutely, absolutely electric, Pete.
Yes, they have shown as many as four episodes ahead of time. And to get this much of the show compared to what we had at this point, you know, you had the logo, if you will, the big yellow muscular comic looking image there, but to get your moving images along with it and the cast to appear together for the first time, really starting to put it together. And Matt, you know, we're still more than 2 months out. Four of these episodes have been seen by some people.
Well, Pete, the mysteries of Spoiler Pete never cease to amaze me. What I liked about the footage that they did show at Comic-Con was, I mean, there's just a big action excitement to it. I think that certainly there's going to be a little bit of a message to the show. Certainly the fact that Luke Cage is a character of color, you're going to have that playing a role to whatever degree in the story. But they didn't lead with that. They led with everybody can watch this show for great action, great drama, great suspense, and we'll kind of let the characters kind of shake out as they will. And hopefully it follows the model that Jessica Jones gave us, which was similarly accessible to everybody while touching on some slightly more specific issues, still with that kind of comic book lens.
Yeah, and you touch on the issues, Matt, and let's hit it squarely. You're talking about an African-American hero in a largely African-American cast. I love the tone that is set with this trailer. You get some old Dirty Bastard there with Shimmy Shimmy Ya. Okay, I like it raw. And the rawness of the character, at the same time, I think Mike Coulter has played Luke Cage that we've seen thus far pretty smooth, with the exception of when he took the shotgun to the face. But I really think that this has gotten people Friday were and over the weekend were talking about this, that Luke Cage was not on their radar before. And that's only to the credit of the production team and the artists involved. And this has increased in terms of people's anticipation.
It certainly is interesting to hear that people didn't know the show was coming. Although I guess, you know, not everybody is tied into the multi-year plan, the Defenders plan, the way we are, and certainly the way much of our audience is. Hey, this is why you have these big media events. This is why you have big ad buys. This is why Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is starting before Luke Cage and not after. It's to help spread the word and cross-pollinate and all that. The fact that this is a character who we saw on another show and now is getting his own show, that's incredibly exciting. And I know that I'm super excited for Luke Cage to hit.
So that was the big news, at least as far as what we do to come out on Thursday. Friday at 3 o'clock, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. had its entire cast show up in San Diego. They had filmed, Matt, for 3 days.
So lots of great footage with special effects,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, on this season 4. But there you have Clark Gregg and Ming-Na Wen and Chloe Bennett, okay, and Elizabeth Henstridge and Ian DeCakester. And Henry Simmons. Little, you know, disappointing to not see a little bit more, but we did, Matt, get a significant casting. Not quite clear how extensive this role will be for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.'s 4th season.
Indeed, Pete, the announcement that Diego Luna will be playing Ghost Rider, not the biggest surprise in the world. There had been some whisperings in the wind, even for me, hashtag spoiler pure, Matt. It wasn't a complete surprise. That said, the fact that the show relies so heavily on secrecy and that there had been the rather prominent advertising for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I think it was on the trams buses, or the buses or whatever, yeah, that had the chain on there. People are saying, oh, it's going to be, you know, James as Hellfire. It's going to be, or maybe it'll be Ghost Rider. I really love that this character is going to be used in a Marvel ensemble. I think that the movies have shown that maybe it's not a character that you can get a strong modern comic book movie out of.
Right.
How Ghost Rider is going to fit into things, I don't know. Is it going to be recurring? Is it going to be season long? Is this just the first half? Pete, the fact that we're talking about it, wondering about it, and the fact that we're not completely sure how Ghost Rider fits into the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. as originated from the movies and fit into kind of this pre-Inhuman storyline. It seemed like the pieces don't all fit together, but I believe in Jed Whedon and Marissa Tancher-Owen.
Well, here's the deal. And, you know, turn away if you haven't finished the 3rd season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which is all on Netflix now anyway. It would have been enough for them to go into season 4 with, okay, we're going to tell the Fall of Sky story and lead up to that. No, they doubled down and said, yeah, we're going to take this character who's been strong enough to have had Nick Cage play him in 2 movies that were largely unsuccessful and bring him back into our Marvel Cinematic Universe fold and do him on the small screen. You might be reminded that they did something similar this year with the character of the Punisher, something that they had a couple goes at cinematically, largely unsuccessful, brought him to TV, hit a home run. I have every expectation this is going to be compelling. Probably not a character who's going to, you know, be in every episode. However, it's the type of thing. It is increased anticipation, Matt, for a fourth season show.
Well, Pete, you've increased my confidence in it. Hopefully this isn't like the A-Team, where they added a guy that didn't fit in the last season, and then things didn't turn out so well. But Pete, you've made me feel more confident in the way things are.
And Matt, you know, as if it wasn't enough that you had on one day the Marvel panel for their newest Netflix show, on the next, you had a Marvel panel for their ABC TV show that's currently in production for its fourth season. Oh, yeah. Hey, fans and internet, let's throw out a teaser for the just into production next Marvel TV show, the fourth part of The Defenders. Oh, yeah. And hang on. Let's throw in a teaser for The Defenders.
Both of those teasers, really, really fun. There was more footage in the Iron Fist teaser than I would have expected. I know they've been filming a while, whereas Defenders, not so much. I think we have figured Iron Fist probably spring 2017 and Defenders fall/early winter.
I'm going to say it's going to be around a year from now.
For which?
For Defenders.
Ooh, that would be interesting. Both as per their teasers. Actually, I don't know that Defenders on the teaser itself says 2017. It might just say coming soon. But
it does.
Okay.
2017.
Clearly, neither are coming out this year. But the Iron Fist stuff looks great. It's a character that I think you and I are a little less familiar with from the comics. Although worth mentioning, it's not put together yet, but yes, of course we will be doing an Iron Fist podcast. And since you're listening to the Pop Culture Podcast, it'll be showing up here as well. But that looks like it's off to a great start. And then the patchwork way in which the Defenders, teaser, all computer effects, is put together. That's a lot of fun. It really sells in a visual way this notion of the four heroes coming together. And as pointed out, I want to say, I think, by our pal Mary Kirk on Twitter, the mentioning there of the character of Stick, suggesting that he'll be helping bring the four of them together, superimposed his voices with the image of a hand. Perhaps it's the hand coming back again. So some goodies there out of the Defenders teaser.
Nothing like this, Matt, has ever been conceived and followed through. So we're truly in uncharted territory. To get the footage of the fourth show and to salivate at the miniseries where all four of these protagonists and many of the other characters that have shown up across these four very different shows set in the same universe are going to unite. Nothing's ever been done like this. And then, oh yeah, hey, Daredevil season 3, 2017 too. On top of, while we didn't get anything at San Diego Comic-Con, the previous announcement that Jessica Jones is going to film a second season in 2017. So Matt, our cup runneth over, and this is without no Punisher to this point, which is definitely part of the plans going forward.
It's an incredibly, incredibly exciting time. I think a discussion for another day is, does Marvel television look for places to maybe tap the brakes in order to not have overload? But that's a prognostication podcast for another day. Just incredibly exciting to have all this content coming through, all this great stuff to podcast, to discuss, etc. And Pete, I'll just mention in passing, there was another lesson from Comic-Con. The Batman the Killing Joke panel was how not to speak to members of the audience and how not to maybe write female characters. And I have no interest in seeing it.
One other thing I think bears pointing out, only conspicuous by its absence occurring in this universe, nothing on the Cloak and Dagger live action show, which is going to air on Freeform, right?
Freeform, the former ABC family.
Yeah, which you would think that perhaps, I mean, I'm not completely on top of where they are in their production schedule, but you'd think there would have been something given all the Netflix stuff. I mean, listen, Matt, if you're making TV right now, Netflix is where you want to be, because they're going to give you what you want and let you go do your thing. And you're going to put it all together and say, hey, here's this 13 episode story we just did for you. And that has become the model to where we're going to talk about that in our next piece.
Well, just to conclude the Cloak and Dagger thought, is it, here's a couple of things that perhaps we could read tea leaf wise. We're talking about the Marvel Netflix panel. Is it inappropriate at the very least, if not, I don't know, stepping on toes to do non-Netflix stuff at that panel if you're the people in charge of it? Perhaps so. Second of all, while it's scheduled to air in 2017, maybe they're behind on that. If so, why discuss bad news? Even if they're on task for 2017, if it's going to be the second half of 2017 and it's not a Netflix property, how about let it be its own thing at Comic-Con next year? Or let it be something at New York Comic-Con, whatever it might be. Let it be later if you're talking 18 months away, potentially.
I mean, fair points all, for sure. But Matt, it was the 2 p.m. slot on Saturday where, you know, we had targeted this one a while out. This was the 50th anniversary Star Trek panel. And I made a prediction to you, Matt, Thursday.
What was that prediction, Pete?
Well, after we had seen Star Trek Beyond, which we have also recorded a review of, that you can find on this feed and on another one we'll mention in a moment, I made a prediction for you that we would get the title of the forthcoming CBS All Access Star Trek show due to air in early 2017 on Saturday. And yet again, I was correct.
I had very much disagreed with you. I had said, this is the 50th anniversary panel. You're going to have people from other shows that, you know, the other versions of Star Trek there. It's not the time to be looking ahead to the new show. It's not the time to be breaking news there. Yes, I know the panel was moderated by Brian Fuller, who is the showrunner for the new Star Trek show. But I just didn't think that the timing was right. I was wrong. The timing definitely was right. And the exciting announcement there of Star Trek Discovery, some of the launch footage there, perhaps imperfect footage, but exciting nonetheless. I've watched it multiple times. It's just great to be anticipating Star Trek back on television.
I mean, what a weekend for Star Trek. They, with the feature film Star Trek Beyond, they break through and upend a behemoth animated film in The Secret Life of Pets. And now they capitalize on that with the non-Kelvin timeline, prime timeline show teaser that's going to come out in the early part of next year. And the AIM, as discussed during the panel where William Shatner and Brent Spiner and Scott Bakula and Jerry Ryan and, you know, all these established veterans of these previous series, was that they're not going to tell stories episodically. They're going to tell them almost a chapter like a novel at a time. We've been told 13 episodes in this first season. The pilot is going to air over the air on CBS, and then the remainder of the series is going to show up on a weekly basis on CBS All Access. They have our money, and we will be podcasting. We already have our teaser up for Star Trek Discovery. We're the first one to market, and super, super excited. You know, if Brian Fuller can come in the room and say he didn't want to be a writer, he wanted to be a Star Trek writer, I can come in and tell you I didn't want to be a podcaster, I wanted to be a Star Trek podcaster. I'll be a Star Trek writer too. I mean, if you're looking for some.
I know, Pete, that some people are put off by the idea, here's another monthly fee, here's another thing I got to pay. Let's flip that around for a second. Here's the bonus of CBS All Access. If the new Star Trek show stinks, we are going, I mean, like, you know, we Fantastic Geek will certainly make it through the first season, but we as an audience, if we're not happy with what we see, we're not just going to like stop watching in some sort of vague way. You're going to stop paying for CBS All Access. That puts pressure on the show for it to be very, very good. And that is a good thing. The idea that it has to be good week in and week out, fine. There will be the initial interest in the first season. And I think people will stick with it if there's a bump in the road, or if you sit and go, oh my goodness, they just killed a major character, or they just shocked me with whatever, you know, whatever it might be. But the fact that it needs to succeed, and we know what successful Star Trek looks like, is going to encourage them to make successful Star Trek, not to get another suit in the room and go, okay, guys, listen, these phasers, yeah, the gun thing is a little bit hot right now, so could we have them do ninja stuff instead? And, you know, like, well, who's this suit who doesn't understand Star Trek? It needs to be authentic. It needs to work. So that's the positive there.
I know there has been some consternation as a result of the footage. You know, the ship looks weird. I mean, if you go and you examine it, it's taken almost directly from the Ralph McQuarrie, the same of Star Wars production design, had done for the morphed Star Trek Phase 2, which ultimately became Star Trek the Motion Picture back when it was going to be a TV project instead of moving to the screen in the wake of the success of the Star Wars movie in the late 70s. Some people are worried about the roughness of the animation. I think the tweet where the video that was shown to Hall H at San Diego Comic-Con that everybody saw, what you need to really pay attention to is test flight. Matt, they mocked together some stuff. Let's give them an idea what it's going to look like. Not to mention, too, the name of the ship is Discovery. The first shot, Matt, is quite clearly an homage to Stanley Kubrick's 2001, which featured a ship name?
Enterprise?
Discovery.
Oh, that was my second guess.
Yeah. So I think, you know, given the success they had in the box office this weekend, to piggyback that and to build this anticipation, again, it's all about that hype, Matt, to do this for this show that is 6-7 months off, give or take, okay, was a tremendous coup in this, the 50th anniversary year.
I can flash back to my younger years and poring over the Star Trek The Next Generation technical manual. And if you're not in love, dear listener, with the design of the Discovery, I'm with you. But you know what? This is when you have to step back. You got to take your breaths. And you have to remind yourself that it's the people and the stories inside the ship. And you know, the footage, the quality of the footage is not great. How about we let them get to air with final footage? If this is, as you said, Pete, as you reminded us, if this is the test flight, let it be the test flight. Heck, Pete, maybe this is part of some social media, like, I don't know, big like switcheroo. Like they're going to be, oh, that footage that we showed you, that was the original Discovery. This show is about the Discovery C. Boom. And whatever, whatever. Let's just let this flow through before we immediately nerd out in a negative way over, you've stolen my childhood because you used the Ralph McQuarrie Star Trek Phase 2 / Star Trek Planet of the Titans concept art. Like, let's let them cast some people and tell some stories first before we throw rocks at the ship.
Well, and one thing we'll point out, there's two big Star Trek events on the horizon. In August will be the Star Trek Las Vegas convention. And then in early September, which we will bring to you at the Jacob K. Javits Center in our favorite city in the world, New York, will be Star Trek Mission New York, where we are anticipating we will get the cast. They film Matt proverbially around the corner in Toronto. We've talked about it. I think it's a very logical landing spot.
They will absolutely have to be filming by September. They will have to have a cast come September, because the thing launches at the end of January. So definitely looking forward to all of that. And Pete, it's just, it's written in the stars. It's got to be true. It's just got to be that way. And Marvel has been so good to us. Of course, we're going to continue discussing Marvel, et cetera, et cetera. But there's a little extra spring in my podcasting step here, Pete, knowing that there's Star Trek on the horizon.
I mean, listen, we both come from that background. We have gotten into the Marvel stuff. We are flattered by our listeners and fans of the podcast for our Marvel acumen, but we really know our Star Trek.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Pete, with that, the San Diego Comic-Con adventure continued. After Star Trek, there was the Marvel Studios panel. Anything out of there, or is that just a quick Kevin Feige wave his hat and that's it?
Yeah, that 5:30, that's the keynote, Matt, Saturday. Let's go chronologically through what went on there, okay? So you've got a movie coming out in November by the name of Doctor Strange, which features the most bankable star that Marvel has ever signed at the ascension of his career in Benedict Cumberbatch. So of course he was there. And what did they do? They unveiled the final trailer for that, and it's a home run.
The irony is, it's the most bankable star at the time of his signing, as you just said, in a property that objectively, not knowing what Marvel Studios can do, not knowing that there have been other examples of, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy, it's like, well, what is this? What's going on? You would think on the page that Doctor Strange is the least likely successful property to be turned into a movie. But here you have this top-notch star in it, and another exciting trailer, and what's shaping up to be a really, really exciting November.
They have earned this. You mentioned Guardians before, and we're going to go to that in a moment. But, you know, that deemed a huge risk. Look how handsomely that paid off. Obviously, Doctor Strange was in the works before that film even came out. But had not that been a hit like it was, we're maybe not talking about Doctor Strange. Instead, we're going to get this very trippy, nay, nearly unfilmable till it had been done. Character and script in a property that, you know, is just crazy enough to work with a huge international star right now.
There was a great interview that Kevin Feige had, I believe, with the Hollywood Reporter. No, was it Deadline? I think it was Deadline. About 2 months ago, where he said something that has stuck with me ever since. He said, "Who wants to see Iron Man 5, 6, and 7? And it's kind of like, well, actually, I wouldn't. Well, And I think that that's something that is worth keeping in mind, that the Iron Man, I mean, I had no problem with the Iron, well, I guess Iron Man 2 wasn't that great, and I know some people didn't like Iron Man 3, but point being, they keep themselves, Marvel Studios keeps themselves ahead of things getting stale by going out in these different directions and saying, you know what, we can be confident that a well-made Doctor Strange movie is going to be exciting, and we'll go on down the list here that there's, whether it's different combinations or whether it's, quite frankly, different types of people that Hollywood doesn't always put in a movie, that if the comic book character is strong enough, that the story, a movie story, can then coalesce around that. You can get a director who makes sense of it, and actors, and so on and so forth, and people will be into it because it's a comic book movie first and foremost, and you know it's going to be well made, and the audience will embrace it for its differences and not just because it's, there's the Sherlock and he's in the mind bendy Leonardo DiCaprio movie type thing. What's going on? I don't want to go see it. No, it's, you know what? I have faith. Let me go see it.
But and therein is the rub. You know, you've got the crossover appeal that somebody like my wife, who is not a comic book movie person, that this is on her radar, that she's checking Twitter every couple minutes as we know that this panel is happening to see what they've got, tells you how big the appeal has become with these tentpole event movies that Marvel Studios is cranking out.
Next on the list, Pete, as mentioned before, the other movie property that, of course, it would be an awful, awful idea for a movie, Guardians of the Galaxy, that out of left field property that I know we're looking forward to the sequel, and San Diego Comic-Con was looking forward to that as well, and that brought the cast to the halls of San Diego Comic-Con.
Yeah, to get Chris Pratt and Zoe Saldana and Dave Bautista there. You know, this was an enormous hit. It's, I say the little movie that could, it's the big movie that did 2 years ago. And I was telling people 18 months out, okay, Rocket Raccoon, this is going to blow your mind, okay? And you have never cared more for characters like that at the end of that first film. So you know what? Now let's bring back Nebula with Karen Gillian, who was there as well. Now let's add Sylvester Stallone. Oh, yeah, hey, let's go out and get Kurt Russell, which I couldn't believe the amount of stuff that James Gunn, the writer and director, is saying at this panel. You would think these are spoilers, but he wants it out there ahead of time, and he's a guy who will not spoil. He's talked people down on Twitter in terms of reveals. They have put stuff out there intentionally. Man, I don't even know, because you know I know it all and read it all, whether I should go into some of this stuff.
Pete, here's what I know, and I keep it kind of spoiler free, as you know. I know that people are worried that Kurt Russell's playing a planet, but it's not a planet. At least that's what people are now thinking, because they've been talked off the ledge by James Gunn. Is that kind of accurate?
I mean, that's part of it. So the reveal that he will be playing Ego, the living planet, who is indeed the Star-Lord, Peter Quill's father, all put out there in Gunn's own words, not in a synopsis or in a leak or anything like this, out in front of it. But remember, listeners, it's not the what, it's the how, and they didn't spoil the how for you.
Well, that makes me feel okay. If James Gunn is putting it out there, I think I can still stay spoiler pure.
Extensive Facebook page update where he went into the bulk of this stuff. And then, Matt, Michael Rooker in full original comic Yondu getup, complete with the big fin on his head, comes out in character with the rest of the Ravagers and make fun of the cast and make fun of the audience. And then they show us some footage assembled, which brought the house down.
It's a credit to Marvel Studios doing things, you know, doing things differently, looking for these new places to find entertaining stories. I mean, that must have been an insane moment to have that footage revealed. And I mean, let's not forget perhaps the greatest Comic-Con coup, at least in recent memory, was when, surprise, surprise, they flew in the Guardians of the Galaxy cast that hadn't been filming for that long, flew them into San Diego to promote the first film. They were like in town for 36 hours and went back to London. So no surprise there to hear that they're still getting people charged up over Guardians.
Yeah. And all right, so you're two films deep, one of which will come out in November, the other will come out in May of 2017. And another studio might have been like, all right, thanks for coming. But not Marvel Studios, Matt, because they have two other movies that are filming right now. The first of which, Spider-Man Homecoming, yeah, they had their cast there as well.
And to be showing some footage of the new Spider-Man, the beloved Spider-Man, it's just this perfect proof that the decisions surrounding Spider-Man and Sony, Sony says it's co-producing, Marvel Studios says they're spending Sony money and Sony gets to keep all the profits, but that Marvel Studios gets to do whatever it wants, which is an interesting little difference of opinions there, but to get that front and center at a Marvel Studios panel, I mean, what better place than that, and what better kind of proof that Marvel Studios is running the show for this movie?
Well, you know what we got in Tom Holland being there was him seeing for the first time footage they had shot, and the reveal that this is going to be the straight up 10th grade sophomore in high school Peter Parker story, that obviously we have met him in Captain America Civil War, but we're going to delve deep into his story. They showed you production art that confirms who the villain is, and completely worth getting worked up about.
It takes me back, Pete, to the first time a young Andrew Garfield stepped out into Comic-Con knowing that he'd be playing the role of Spider-Man for the next 10 or 15... All the more proof, though, all the more reminder that behind the sizzle there has to be a stake. And no better proof of that than Spider-Man that hasn't had that bounce for a while. And certainly that footage and that portion of the presentation making it look like Spider-Man Ascendant.
Well, let's talk sizzle and let's talk steak, because the sizzle on the way into the Marvel Studios Hall H presentation on Saturday was that they had the Hulk's armor from Thor Ragnarok on display in the exhibition hall. Those of you who know what I'm talking about know that that is a pivotal, outfit, shall we say, from the Planet Hulk storyline, and essentially confirmation that, Matt, they are doing Planet Hulk inside this larger Thor story.
Really, really exciting turn of events, and there's a whole Hulk movie right thing that short version, there can't be a standalone Hulk because you'd have to pay Universal Studios a bunch of money to do it, or that's the shortest of short versions anyway. However, the fact that clearly they're pushing the envelope and it's not a Hulk movie, look, it says Thor, it's taking place in the Thor, it's got the Thor, but we're going to get as much Hulk as we can in there. I'm sure that the lawyers have taken a look and you know, damn the torpedoes full speed ahead, damn the torpedoes, if you will, Pete. And it of course was the one conspicuous hole in Civil War. Where's Thor and Hulk? Right. The fact that that's a question, that's not a hole. I mean, it is what it is story wise, and it's certainly Civil War would have had less impact with those two characters in it, but they turned a negative into a positive, and now an even bigger positive.
Well, they even addressed the 800-pound gamma ray monster in the room, in that they had some footage. They've been shooting for about 2.5 weeks, and you know, they yucked it up. You know, what has Thor been up to? You know, he's got a pegboard with theories on where the remaining Infinity Stones are. You know, it's that buddy comedy vibe, and who knows how much of what they showed, and again, none of it is available elsewhere, will make it into the final product. But you know, that they can do this in this you know, opportunity they're given within this massive panel, Matt, shows you the larger plan. It shows a sense of playfulness. They're not taking themselves so seriously, like in that Murderverse on the other side there. you know, I don't know what more you can say about it.
And that's what it's all about at the end of the day. It's having fun with these characters. I mean, what better bounce? Now, Pete, I'll admit, I've lost count here looking at this giant list here. When does Thor come out?
Thor comes out in November of 2017.
That's what I thought, that we were still talking November, but November is Doctor Strange, but that's this year, and so on and so forth. Anyhow, so I mean, to have this kind of advanced buzz, but buzz that also acknowledges the temporary, the 18-month space between where are they in Civil War, and then an answer, to still be playful with that. And I say temporary because as soon as it comes out, then it's going to be one cohesive story. It's letting your audience in on the, I don't want to say joke, but it's a reminder that this is all for play and all for fun, and you can build it up to serious topics, and you can knock it back down again. But it's this idea of, let's have some fun at the movies with some extraordinary characters.
Well, I mean, then you come to the final film that they promoed, and while they've not shot a lick yet, Matt, they had most of the cast on hand. So here comes Black Panther, slated for February of 2018. So, you know, a little under 2 years away, and you have maybe the most accomplished and, shall we say, hot and in demand African-American cast that's ever been assembled.
The comments that Kevin Feige has made about just kind of being aware that a Black Panther movie needs to be about people of color and needs to be about a particular point of view, while not being a message movie that's going to be inaccessible to a general audience. The fact that he wants to walk that fine line, the fact that he wants to hire people who can help him and help the studio walk that line and find that balance, that's what's incredibly exciting. The fact that we've had the character premiere in Civil War and tantalize us in the secret scenes and give us a springboard for upcoming movies and upcoming adventures and upcoming sequels and all of that to keep this ball rolling, that's just the tip of the iceberg, because we have this different take on things, a different perspective, and it comes back to the quote I referenced earlier. Do you want to have a new Black Panther movie, or do you want to have Iron Man 7? Because I want to see what's going on in Wakanda. I don't need to see, oh man, it's the Mark 82 suit that goes faster. I want to see who some of these people are, who, you know, like, some of these people and their characters. I want to see what's going on in that story and in that neck of the woods.
Matt, I'm going to make a prediction, and people can go ahead and write it down. And when I'm right, in February of 2018, we just added to the list. Black Panther is going to break the records that Deadpool set in February of 2016. This is going to be an enormous film. Let's just assume for a moment that Chadwick Boseman as T'Challa, as Black Panther here, is on point as he was in Civil War. And now you add in here Michael B. Jordan. Yeah, let's get him back from that other Marvel thing that happened last summer that we're not going to mention by name, okay, and cast him. Oh, yeah, and let's get two of the most kick-ass ladies in Hollywood right now in Lupita Nyong'o. She was in this this tiny movie, you know, in December, you know, Motion Cap, Lincoln, you miss her, that kind of thing, as Maz Kanata in Star Wars The Force Awakens, and bring in Danai Gurira from The Walking Dead, who is going to be an enormous star in her own right in film. And this cast, Matt, I don't think I'm more excited about any of the casting than I am about the four of these people who are going to be in this movie that's going to be an enormous hit in February 2018.
At least we can be guaranteed of one thing, Pete. If you play Johnny Storm, you go on to Marvel movies to play bigger and better parts. You go on to bigger and better movies, and your career takes off after that. And as a quick unfunny note on Fantastic Four, it is amazing how each of those actors was in better movies that year, last year. It is a stunning collapse of direction, and a reminder, Pete, that at this year's Comic-Con, did we hear about anything from that director? No, because he's basically, nobody wants to work with him because of the failure of Fantastic Four.
Non grata.
Persona non grata, indeed.
He let Boba Fett slip right through his fingers.
Pete, he's forever going to be holding Jango Fett's helmet against his forehead and saying, what could have been was. So, Pete, is that it
for no, that's
Marvel? What? There's more?
That's not it. Wow. This will not be the next Marvel movie to lens. That will be the first of the dual part Avenger movie, which is set to begin filming this coming November. They did cast a character who is believed to show up in that film, in those films, who in between the two Avengers movies will get her own standalone film, the first ever Marvel Studios female-led film.
And Pete, that is, of course, Captain Marvel, the announcement that Brie Larson, as was rumored, but she had been officially given the role. And I mean, somebody who's first of all, Oscar winner this past year, if that doesn't say something, somebody who at the age of 26 has just had this incredibly powerful and incredibly action-packed and dramatic resume. I mean, it's kind of insane to roll through all the things that she's done. I mean, there's you know, 13 going on 30, you know, that delightful Jennifer Garner thing from 2004 to, you know, some Disney stuff in there. Scott Pilgrim versus the World, 21 Jump Street. And you just see this resume growing. Kong Skull Island. We'll see how that is. Obviously, smaller films like her Oscar-winning role in Room. And there's a power to her that is incredibly exciting. Let's bring it on. Is it 2019 yet, Pete?
It's like the casting people are saying, all right, how can we one-up ourselves each time? Oh, let's assemble the most in-demand cast of color maybe ever. Okay, great. What are you going to do for an encore? Oh, let's get the woman who broke through in a really unusual Academy Award nominated film and won the Oscar for Best Actress. Yeah, let's tap her to be our first lady to carry a Marvel movie on her own. What's next? Are they gonna resurrect the dead star? I just feel like that's the last thing they can do.
Pete, breaking news. Guardians of Galaxy 3. The villain will be played by computer-generated Elvis Presley.
I mean, nothing surprises me at this point. It had been openly whispered that Larson was going to get the role. I know they took a serious shot at Gwendolyn Christie, given the buzz that she earned, and rightly so, as Captain Phasma in Star Wars: The Force Awakens. Not her chance yet to break through there. She'll be all right. She's going to have an increased role in Star Wars Episode 8. This is a huge cast, and they just keep coming, Matt. I have no words. I want to see something come out, and they'd be, you know what? It's just not up to the standards. But we've just continued to raise the bar each time. It's no wonder that DC and everybody else under the sun is struggling to keep up.
Although, Pete, worth mentioning as we start to wrap things up here, Warner Brothers debuting the Wonder Woman trailer that looks incredible. It looks wonderful.
It does. I'm super excited about that. And, you know, I think what's going to save that is it occurs largely before the Batman v Superman mess. And though it's in that murderverse, and there's nothing else you can call it, I can't take credit for that term, but it is the murderverse. I have very high hopes for Suicide Squad. I hope it delivers. Batman v Superman is a train wreck, and clearly some of the better moments of it came from Diana Prince in Wonder Woman, and I'm super excited to see her get her own film. The trailer hits it at every point, but we've been deceived before, Matt. Those Man of Steel trailers, they were a plus, and that product is something less than that.
Nobody wins if these movies are bad. Yep. And I know that oftentimes, you know, there'll be the oh, you guys have such a Marvel bias, this and the other. Look, many people were not happy with Batman v Superman, and we're all winners if Wonder Woman is great, and if they can get it turned around for Justice League, as you know, I mean, you kind of see a lighter take on things for the Justice League trailer that also was dropped this weekend. Kind of looks a little incongruous compared to the movie that came before it, but fine. That's what a sudden left turn looks like. Kind of interesting that the poster features Superman. I mean, yeah, we know he's coming back, but can you at least give us dramatic disbelief here to be like, oh man, they really did kill him off and it's for good, you know? But I digress. If these movies are fun, great. We could do a movie podcast once a month between Star Wars and Marvel and DC. If it's all good, bring it on.
Yeah, I mean, we all win if these succeed. Unfortunately, that's not always the case. And listen, Marvel Studios has had a couple missteps. You know, that Hulk movie is not going to make anybody's top 10 of anything anytime soon. That second Avengers movie, you know, they've made better. But, you know, I think the choices that they've made in terms of the out of the box properties, and look what they've done too. Though this studio is the house that Robert Downey Jr. has built, look at how they're progressively getting away from those characters. They're given a whole new pantheon of characters to get behind. They have made Chris Pratt an enormous movie star. Okay. Brie Larson, in her own right, is already a star. She's going to be a mega star after that role. I'm excited for my nieces to be running around pretending their Captain Marvel.
Well, Pete, you mentioned that Pantheon. I guess the final thing on the agenda here, the reveal of the new Marvel Studios logo that uses the likenesses of the movie characters. So you have your Robert Downey Jr. there. You have your Chris Hemsworth featured, and so on and so forth. And music by the familiar to our podcast. This is the Michael Giacchino new music. I kind of prefer the previous music that was there, but certainly an exciting Marvel Studios logo.
It comes again with Up in Your Game, and let's call this what it is. They need to further differentiate themselves from the amount of content out there that is branded as Marvel. People still think that Deadpool exists filmically in the same universe as Captain America, as, you know, some of these other characters that, because of complicated rights deals, no, they're not all together. They might appear in your comic book. They're different when they're on your film and your TV screen. And this is a way to visually and here musically differentiate that. And not only that, Matt, and I think we're going to get a shortened view of that. You know, it's like a 30-second clip. I think we're going to get that compacted even more when it appears before Doctor Strange for the first time, for which Giacchino is also doing the score. But we're also given revised logos for each of those films. The Guardians of the Galaxy one got a touch up. The Thor Ragnarok one looks like something out of, you know, you would see on a 1980s video game cabinet. I dig the hell out of it.
It definitely is an impressive look, and it's a reminder too that I don't know, as you get closer to these movies coming out, you can refine things like the logo and just kind of have that faith. I mean, you're right. You look at that Thor Ragnarok logo and it looks throwback in a way that is a little, I don't say off-putting, but it's like, what is that? That's out of left field. Well, you know what? It's out of left field, but above the line it says Thor. And above that, it says Marvel Studios, and you kind of trust it from there, along with the weird Ragnarok stylings. Well, Pete, the best styling of all is, of course, the fact that people can interact with you on Twitter. How can people do so?
You can find me on Twitter at Peter, PieterJKetelaar, KetelaaR, 8072 followers. Can't be wrong.
And while I am personally on Twitter as Looking Back Lost, you can be in touch with the podcast in a whole variety of ways. We are Fantastic Geek. That is Fantastic with the P and the H. And you can find us under that name on .com, the Gmail, the Instagram, the Twitter. But wait, Pete, there's more.
Facebook.com/Fantastic Geek. All one word with the PH. Click the little thumbs up and you'll always know what's up with us, with Marvel, with Star Trek, with it all.
Well, Pete, we will be back on this pop culture podcast feed before too long, talking summertime Star Trek, which, surprise, is now also wintertime Star Trek. We'll be getting closer to the fall. As we get closer to the fall, I should say, we'll be previewing the fall time shows, Luke Cage and S.H.I.E.L.D. And it's just an exciting time ahead, and we'll be covering whatever breaking news comes along our way as well. So with that, thank you one and all for listening. I'll say adios. Pete, the final word goes to you.
Bye-bye for now.